of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 598. Jason Lindgren is with me and Wayne McCroy returns. We're going to be talking about the petrodollar. And this is actually quite a major deal. And if you're not aware of why, hopefully you will be by the time we get through this. But the petrodollar is going away along with the world we used to know or the systems we used to be used to. And if you're not aware, one of the very clever things our government did back in the day was they tied the American dollar to the sale of oil. But we'll cover that as we get in. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a warm and lovely good morning.
All right. Welcome back, Wayne. And I understand you've been losing weight and getting good results with the noni juice.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me back on. Certainly, the noni juice has been a godsend for me, and I have made it available to my listeners at my website. That's alchemicaltechrevolution.com. And if you type in /ATR-health, you'll find all the links you need for the noni juice and the other products that are based on noni juice that are available now. Now, I've had some tremendous results with this. I'm down, as of this morning, 26 pounds that I've kept off. I've been using this for 6 months, and I feel healthier than I've felt in years. My arthritis is essentially gone, and my elevated blood pressure is way back down into the normal range where it belongs. Wow. All just taking two of these products. So I wanted to make them available for my listeners. And my wife has had outstanding results with this, with her chronic health conditions. So I've made this available for people. And don't be put off, because a lot of people look at it and think it's some type of a pyramid scheme. It is based on network marketing, how they sell this and make this available, but the products work. And that's the important point here. They're legitimate products, and I wanted to make them available. And there's different ways you can purchase this. And there's various discount levels you could buy in at if you wanted to repeat using them. But I've had tremendous results, so I wanted to pass that on to my listeners. And it's a way to help support my broadcast. So that being said, we should probably get right to the subject at hand. I want to thank you for having me back on again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, my arthritis, I stopped it the very day I started taking certain supplements. So I think it's pretty clear at this point that nutrition is the basis for so many of the ills. But anyhow, it's all you, Jason. Let's jump in and tackle the issue at hand here.
The Bretton Woods Agreement was a set of rules for the international monetary system that was created in 1944 by delegates from 44 nations. The agreement was the result of the Bretton Woods Conference, which was held at the Mount Washington Hotel in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, from July 1st through 22nd, 1944. The main goals of the conference were as follows: establish a system to promote long-term global growth, help countries recover from World War II, ensure exchange rate stability, prevent competitive devaluations. The main outcomes of the conference were the creation of the International Monetary Fund and the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. The Bretton Woods system lasted until 1971, when President Richard Nixon ended the dollar's convertibility to gold. The Bretton Woods Agreement is considered significant for a number of reasons, including it helped to strengthen the world economy, it maximized international trade profit, and it unified 44 nations to work together to solve a global financial crisis. And I would add to this before we move forward that at the time, the United States dollar seemed to be the world's reserve currency, something that seems to be, if not gone, very much diminished in this day and age.
Well, I have a slightly different take on why and how this was done. If you look at the notes, we come out of World War II, and here comes the IMF and all the places everyone loves to hate now because the condition the world's in. These are chess pieces moving. If I had to set an event that slipped us forward into the world that we're witnessing now, that's World War I, though it's so long ago, most of us don't have much of a view. After World War II, they did things like this. And when did it end? It ended when the dollar came off the gold standard. And that's a bit like privatizing medicine. Everything is going to go to hell in a handbasket after these events. I mean, what do you think, Wayne?
Well, I would just take note as to the date that this Bretton Woods agreement took place. It was in 1944, so it was before the end of the war. So if that doesn't tell you some kind of pre-planning to all of this, these weren't just organic natural events that happened in the course of human history, and we were just trying to recover from the fallout of World War II. This was actually taking place during the end phases of World War II. So they clearly had a plan in mind. And this is where we get the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the Bank for International Settlements, which the bank here that was named the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development morphed into later, and the World Bank. So all of these things came together with this big system. And this was all part of the Bretton Woods agreement. And then, of course, we see how the U.S. went off the gold standard in 1971, 27 years later, and we have now what's been instantiated as the petrodollar, which is what we're going to get to, but that's disappearing now. And all of this, of course, plays into the coming global system that they want, this digital system. So without further ado, I think maybe we should get to the next bullet point here.
Well, let me see if I got this straight. They start World War II to stabilize everything, and then as it's coming to a close, they create this to help them recover from the war they just started. Isn't that in a nutshell? Anyhow, go ahead, Jason.
Seems like it.
Well, here's the thing that I'd like to point out, because I just glanced at an article on this. The Axis powers didn't seem to be involved in that, but guess who was? The Soviet Union.
You know, we're going to maybe do a show with Fortune, and I was a bit nervous of some of the things he was telling me, like the reason they actually don't want Trump in office. And I was asking him, can we say these things on a public platform? And he said some of it, but the whole story of what happened to Russia is tied up behind what you're alluding to. But anyhow, I don't want to pull us off track here.
So what exactly is the petrodollar? In short, it's a commitment by Saudi Arabia to use dollar revenues from oil sales to the United States to buy U.S. treasuries. Now, this is something that we've discussed many times on this show. The way it always worked since this was put into place way back when, over 50 years ago now, that if a country wanted to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, and many did, they had to do it in U.S. dollars, meaning they had to take their currency and buy into U.S. dollars first before they could make the purchase.
Well, what's crazy is now what we're seeing is the exact reverse of this. This little genius move, which guaranteed the viability, importance, and power of the dollar, is now the exact opposite. Now they're ripping it all down. Why would you ever let go or let it come into danger, a system like this that is stacked so heavily in your favor, Wayne?
Well, I would say it's by design, first of all, because they want that system to fall. So what is it intended to do? Well, I would say it's probably to crash the U.S. economy, by and large, is why they're switching away from this. Because why would you give up that type of an advantage that you have in the world market? So you could see here, and this says that Saudi Arabia uses the dollar to buy U.S. treasuries. So that kind of gives them investment in the U.S. So we have outside foreign nations investing in U.S. interests in this way. And now they're backing away from that because now we have other systems that they're dealing with. And I'm thinking in particular of something like the BRICS system that's come to fruition now. So all of these things are in opposition to the U.S. dollar being backed as the petrodollar here. And it's all going away very soon. That's the whole point of all of this.
I would think that there's an implication that there is already a system in mind that they would be switching to, although, of course, it's not been officially announced.
Well, it feels like they keep leaning towards BRICS is going to be the new top dog in town. At least whispers and hints seem that. But the interesting thing to me is the other thing you keep hearing alluded to is gold-backed currency via Russia and other places. So it will be very interesting to see if any of the dominant monetary systems have any connection to true currency, gold and silver.
In 1971, Richard Nixon's decision to end the dollar's gold backing led to economic turmoil known as stagflation, with the United States facing devalued currency, high unemployment, and soaring living costs. A solution was sought. In 1973, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger secured a deal with Saudi Arabia to exclusively sell oil globally in dollars, boosting demand for the weakening currency. This strategic move allowed the U.S. to sustain trade deficits as countries exchanged dollars for oil. OPEC countries further fueled the U.S. economy by reinvesting their dollar profits into American bonds, enabling the U.S. to finance its government and run trade deficits without severe financial consequences. I mean, when you think about this on the world stage, could you really have anything better just handed to you?
Well, and now think about what's actually been implemented here. They took the dominant currency of the world, the greenback, the dollar, the most respected and sought after currency, decoupled it from actual value, gold, or finished decoupling it from actual gold, then forced everybody who wants to drive a car, basically, to use a currency that is no longer coupled to value.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's an ingenious strategy, really. So here's what they did. They manufactured a new crisis from this by decoupling the dollar from the gold standard. And then, of course, they rolled out a solution just a mere 2 years later and used this oil petroleum-backed dollar system to get people back into using the U.S. dollar as a means of exchange. So it was a brilliant strategy, and now they've removed the value from underneath it. They pulled the carpet out. They pulled the rug out from under it when it really comes down to it. So now it's just based upon the faith in the U.S. government at this point. So the dollar is not really backed by anything. Even this notion of a petrodollar, it's not really backed by the value of the oil. It's backed by nothing, just the good faith of the American people, and that's it.
Shifting the whole world into a devalued currency usage at a high level. And I remember these times. The reason this was so easy to pull off is because only dad had to work back then. Dad could remember his dad, my grandfather, who also was the only one who had to work to own a home and have a car and all the things in America. I can go to the movies, like, you know, all the things that were on offer here. Everybody was so happy and proud. And look what was going on. You know, while we watched the right hand, what was the left hand doing? Anyhow.
So there's also the thing we got to think about. By this point, the military industrial complex of the United States was way out of control. And this almost gave them a blank check to just do whatever the hell they wanted. And at the time, we have to remember that we were engulfed in the Vietnam conflict.
Right.
And that's a good point, because World War II is also another side effect of World War II is the just explosion of the military-industrial complex, given more money and power than maybe any organization ever has. Who knows? But what were you going to say, Wayne?
I was going to say, certainly there is a social engineering agenda attached to this as well, because you see, it was all about destabilizing the traditional family unit. This was also an undercurrent of what happened by decoupling the value of gold from the dollar. It helped to destabilize this. As Jason was alluding to earlier, you had this notion where it was only one person in the household needed to work at that point, and this created the stagflation tragedy, or how do we want to say that, the disaster at the time in the American culture, this hyperinflation that went on at that point that was affecting people. So this drove down the spending power of the American people in a lot of ways. So it brought in this era where two members of the family needed to work in order to stay afloat. So it was a social engineering trope underneath all of it. You see how insidious a lot of this stuff is and how they could hit from multiple angles at once to engineer things into society that they want.
It's crazy. And the other thing is, most people aren't as old as I am, can remember the big oil crises. There were two of them that happened right in this time in the 70s. It's a little further down the road into the 70s, but all these crises are tied to oil. And then again, if you look at the date where this solution's being implemented, 1973, if you ask anybody, when were the greatest cars in this country? Most of them are going to tell you, from the 60s into the very early 70s, and then everything starts to change. The horsepower goes down. Everything starts being made out of plastic. There are so many moving parts going, but if you want to be honest, the slip downhill is really starting right about 1973.
In 1971, the United States ended the dollar's convertibility to gold, which had been the linchpin of the Bretton Woods International Monetary System of Fixed Exchange Rates. major currencies began to float against each other in 1973. Then came the oil shock that fall, when the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, commonly known as OPEC, cut oil production and embargoed shipments to the United States during the Yom Kippur War.
Wait a minute, I'm confused here. In 1973, according to history, Kissinger creates a deal with the Mideast, with the Saudi, the House of Saud, the made-up royal folk there, and says, the whole world's going to have to use our American dollars to buy your oil product. And then you're telling me in the same year, all of a sudden, they embargoed the United States? And people have no idea what a pain in the butt the oil crisis was. There were lines around city blocks to get oil. And certain times, I remember, they would look at the last number in your license plate. Odd number could get gas these days. There were times when you could only get half a tank. And you got to realize, back in this time, it was not uncommon for a car to get 8 to 12 miles per gallon. I mean, go ahead, Wayne.
Well, think about this. So they engineered a crisis in the valuation of the American dollar in 1971 by switching away from the gold standard. They had a solution in mind. Well, let's invent this petrodollar notion. We'll go to Saudi Arabia. We'll tell them, if you want to do business, you have to use American dollars. Okay, good. So we have the solution to that problem. So what do? Later that year, they manufacture another crisis. Do you see how this all works? It's the same political theater that's been going on from time immemorial. They create a problem, and then they present to you the solution that always invariably takes away more of your rights and freedoms. And there you have it.
The impact of the big oil thing in the 70s hit so hard because America was a car nation. Everyone had cars, everything we did, you know, the old Route 66 mythology, all of it was everything about being an American in one way or another centered around driving vehicles. But anyhow, I don't want to harp too hard. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, I have a question about this, and I've always had this question since I found out about this, and that's America can make its own oil. We have multiple places in this country that oil can be drilled from.
Yep.
So why the hell weren't they doing it? Why didn't they just rely a little more on that instead of completely stifling Americans' capability to purchase gas for their cars? And as you said, at the time, most cars were gas guzzlers, and that's what brought in selling people a whole bunch of new cars that weren't gas guzzlers.
Well, I can tell you what the mainstream response to your question is. It was, we can't touch our oil that we make because that is an emergency reserve. That's what we were told at the time. I was there, I remember.
Well, I would add to that that probably the real reason behind the scenes is because they are heavily vested in this global market strategy. So in order to bring the whole world into the economic system, they had to go outside the borders of the U.S. You see, they can't have the U.S. operating in a way in which they're self-sufficient, because that would take away from some of the other resources of the world and other portions of the trade in the world stage. So that's probably the main reason why they had to make this go international.
If we do get Fortune back on, we should absolutely ask him what went down with that Kissinger deal to get the Royal House of Saud to agree to such a thing. You know, I'm almost certain it's about military might.
If I remember correctly, it had to do with military support and such.
Yeah, but he can always tell you what happened under the table.
The United States-Saudi Arabian Joint Commission on Economic Cooperation was established 50 years ago on June 8, 1974. The commission was formed shortly after the 1973 OPEC oil embargo in order to strengthen economic ties between the two countries. The two countries were motivated to forge a more formal arrangement that would ensure mutual benefits from their collaboration.
I wonder if they would have been so eager to be strong-armed into the petrodollar deal if they would have been aware of the dismantling of the Middle East that is happening as we speak right now. One of the big claims is that if World War III starts, it's going to happen in the Mideast, and everyone saw the news last night. 180 missiles. Well, I was in the military. I've seen a missile. Not sure I would call those missiles. But anyhow, Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, I just find the timing of everything going on now apropos. I mean, you look back, it said that this whole system now was set up 50 years ago in 1974, exactly 50 years. And when you realize that many of these people on the world stage plan things in 50 and 100 year increment plans, then you begin to realize that maybe we're seeing the chess pieces moving forward here again. So some of these things never cease to amaze me, even though I half expect them at this point.
Let's go back to Riyadh and the House of Saud, Jason.
To encourage Riyadh's use of the dollar as the medium of exchange for its oil sales and thereby funnel those dollars back into treasury bond markets to help finance U.S. fiscal deficits, Washington promised to supply military equipment to Saudi Arabia and protect its national security. Despite the tumult and instability in the United States at that time, the deal showed that it retained the power to set the international agenda. In addition to keeping demand for the dollar stable, the agreement promoted its use in oil and commodities trading while creating a steady source of demand for U.S. treasuries. This helped to strengthen the dollar's position as the world's key reserve, financing, and transactional currency. Now, the whole thing with the bonds and all that, that's tied up with the Federal Reserve. So you can see how the international bankers are getting their paws in there, too.
Well, we haven't even mentioned that. What actually is a dollar, right? That's coming from the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor a reserve. And I can't think of a way that could possibly make a currency stronger than doing something like this. I mean, we're talking about commodities here, oil, but if it was like just human beings in the room, it's almost like saying anyone who wants a drink of water starting now has to use this currency. I mean, name a thing that could be more powerful at this time than forcing the coupling of your fake currency from your Federal Reserve to a commodity that the entire world has to have to operate.
Well, certainly we see that. And this is about actually shifting to a one world currency. This is one step of the Overton window into doing that. Yep. So certainly we see that was what was intended here, and it was international in scope. And that's the true reason why they went ahead and instantiated the petrodollar here. It's to bring the international market together under one unified currency, or at least step towards that direction. And we're almost there now.
Yeah, we're knocking on heaven's door.
Contrary to recent reports, Saudi Arabia continued to accept other currencies, such as the British pound, for its oil even after the agreement. This indicates that there was no requirement for transactions to be conducted exclusively in U.S. dollars.
Go ahead, Wayne. This one's about, you know, that's a bit of a twist in the story we've been handed.
It is a bit of a twist. So even though it wasn't required, it was certainly implied that you should trade in U.S. dollars. It's the coercion principle at play here. It's making people believe something to be true that's not necessarily true, just like you can opt out of things that you don't want to be a part of. They don't tell you that portion of it. They just tell you it's a mandate or some such thing. It doesn't have the backing of law behind it or international law, but certainly they would imply you should use the U.S. dollar in this case, although sometimes things were done under the table that were not acknowledged in the public theater.
I would not be surprised if someone like Fortune would say something like, well, they did it because the king was told you'll remain in power or something like that.
This might also have to do with the whole three city-states that exist in the world kind of thing. And the city of London is one of those three.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt of that. I mean, we're talking about the WEF and, you know, places like that. These guys are all in. The three city states are all in. And we are on the brink right now, whether truly a war does come this fall, which has been, you know, kicked around for so long now, or whether it's something else. It is darn clear that they're looking to remove rights, reduce populations, and exert total control over the use of money of any kind.
And for anybody not familiar, the three major city states that exist in the world are Washington, D.C., the City of London, not London, but the City of London, and Vatican City. And the quickie on that, for anyone who is not familiar, is that these are individual entities that exist inside another country. And that's a big deal.
it is a big deal. And it also harkens on this rule of threes that they use, the Trinity. So you have Washington, D.C. is the military arm. The Vatican is the religious arm. And the City of London is the financial arm. So that's probably one of the reasons why the British pound was also accepted, because this is at the core of the financial system when it comes down to it, with these three big city states backing everything. So the archetype is ever present there. And certainly they do have roads to power in those places and have a lot of influence and sway in things that go on the world stage. So even though it may be largely unacknowledged in the mainstream, certainly we have to keep that in mind as we look at this stuff.
Yeah, they're all in, and they've always been all in. They're like a gang. I don't know how much animosity happens between them, but in the book that I've mentioned recently called The Saudi Swindle, it is claimed openly, and I think it's cited, that there was a contract from the Rothschilds to control the British crown, and that contract expired or ended. I think it's 2014 or 2016, but I'm not even kidding. It's really kind of that bad. And the reason I thought of that is because I think the Queen's not even allowed to go into the City of London without permission.
That's correct. The City of London has its own mayor, and they're set up so that they are their own entities. Now, this is generally not discussed openly, but when you actually look into them, which we did, and it was one of our early episodes, in fact, one of the first 100, I believe, that we covered all this stuff. Now, there are some other city-states that exist in the world, but they don't seem to be major players like Washington, the City of London, and Vatican City.
Yeah, some people, I saw some decent work of where the Egyptian obelisks have gone, but again, I don't want to pull us off track. And there's a direct relation to where those obelisks have gone, but maybe Rose will ping me and I'll give the episode number where we covered the three city-states.
A more secretive arrangement emerged later in 1974, where Saudi Arabia agreed to invest heavily in U.S. treasuries in exchange for military support. This deal, revealed in 2016 through a Freedom of Information Act requested by Bloomberg News, was focused on strategic financial cooperation rather than enforcing a strict dollar-only oil pricing system. So what do we have here? The military-industrial complex getting involved overseas.
Yeah, and don't forget, when I was in the military, there was a supposed war, right? That was supposedly that one Mideast nation had trampled on another. But where was it that our military started to amass? It was in Saudi Arabia. And by the way, Rose just pinged me. The episode we did on the three city states is 118. And then we did central banking and the red-blue mind virus paradigm. And those are episode 119 and 120. Anyhow, go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, well, we see here that the implication, though, is made that they should use the dollar-only pricing system. So this is what they implied to the rest of the world, although that wasn't necessarily the case. Certainly, Saudi Arabia would have traded with other dollars or other financial instruments to do so. But in exchange for U.S. military resources, they went ahead and invested heavily in the U.S. dollar and seemed to promote this notion that you should do the trading for oil in U.S. dollars.
Most of the people listening to this have not known a world where the dollar wasn't the petrodollar and where the dollar wasn't a major player in the world. And that is coming to an end. And by the way, there are a few things that typically make gold and silver prices go way up. One of them is war. Another one is when currency value goes down, just to make the statement. Go ahead, Jason.
While the U.S. dollar remains dominant in global trade, including oil and other commodities, there has been a gradual shift towards using non-dollar currencies.
It's almost like everything we're talking about is part of the queue up for that. Once upon a time, there was money with value. In the 70s, the biggest currency in the world block decoupled from value. And then they said, guess what? If you want to use oil, you've got to use our valueless dollar. And by the way, it's not federal. Some private families own and operate this. You know them, the central banksters. It's almost like every little move that was made has carefully led up to where we find ourselves today.
Yeah, I would say it's almost like maybe they had some kind of a 50-year agreement that they came to terms with in 1974, and now that 50-year agreement is perhaps up now, so now they're going to switch to something different. And remember, much of this was negotiated in secret, as exposed by this Freedom of Information Act request by Bloomberg News in 2016. People didn't know that much of the petrodollar narrative was crafted in secret behind the scenes until 2016. So you're going back a good long time now that this has remained hidden from the public at large. So here we sit 50 years later, and could it be that perhaps their contractual agreement they came to terms with in 1974 is done now?
Let me state the obvious. For my entire lifetime, who's the enemy? Russia and China. They're communists. They're reds. They're always the enemy. Well, the United States has successfully moved all of its manufacturing to China and other places. In 1997, which we also cover in an episode, our boys in Silicon Valley gave away at a picnic in 97 the technology China needed to launch their infrastructure for their version of Facebook. The difference is their version of Facebook and the other things they got is everything, your hospital, your police, you rent an apartment, you anything. It's all in their version of Facebook. With that came the social controls and the social ratings. So does it take a genius to comprehend that now they're letting the petrodollar agreement slip away, they're devaluing the dollar, and there's always whispers that BRICS is going to have the pull in the oil markets, which, by the way, are also going away because oil pollutes the world. Doesn't it seem obvious to everybody that the queue up is to shift power to China, who has now proven that they can control every soul in their borders, policing them with technology?
Let's also not forget who it was that was the instigator of this, and that's Henry Kissinger. Well, Henry Kissinger was one of the most public of the globalist figures. He knew what he was doing then, and he knew what would be in mind for the future. And he only recently passed away just in the last few years at the ripe old age of 100, I believe.
He must have run out of virgins to suck the blood out of. I'm making a joke, kind of. But we often ask, all the things we've covered, who's done the most damage? And typically we say Bernays, but for my money, Kissinger's right up there.
Yeah, Kissinger had a lot of sway and influence. And who is it now that we have? I don't know the answer to this, that has fulfilled the role of a Kissinger in this world. The guy had a lot of inroads to a lot of places of power, and he was one of the primary movers and shakers of a lot of the policies that we see in place in the world today, especially as it relates to this international financial system that we're looking at. So who's going to fill that role, or who has filled that role? I don't know, but we need to keep our eyes open so that we can have a better view of what's coming and when it's coming.
Maybe it's the guy at the WEF. So if I'm not mistaken, Kissinger, English to Kissinger was a second or a third language, I think, not his primary. Who's the dude with the, you know, movie evil German accent guy?
Klaus Schwab.
Yeah.
And I believe they were both German.
Well, as we're finding out, what was supposedly, it's exactly like the movie The Winter Soldier. The Marvel movie Winter Soldier, it is exactly like that. When they go down and, you know, the guy's living in the computer, you didn't win, Captain America. We were a parasite in your victory parade. You know, it's exactly like that. All these ex-Nazis and ex-people that we were told are our enemies are now running the World Trade Organizations. They're making the rules for everybody.
It's one of them coincidences, isn't it?
The thing to know here, and why I brought it up in the first place, is that if Kissinger was involved, it wasn't just to benefit the United States, it was to benefit the globalist agenda.
Yeah. You know, the whole 1984 story, I'm not going to pull us off, but the reason we have the date 1984 is important, besides the book that made it important, is because it was exactly 100 years after the formation of a certain group. Anyhow, go ahead, Jason.
In 2023, Russia became China's top crude supplier, with most payments made in yuan. Additionally, the UAE and India signed an agreement to trade oil in their local currencies, marking a significant step towards de-dollarization in the region.
Hey, Wayne, how does it feel to not be a member of the toughest country in the world anymore?
Now, it's hard to say for sure because, well, we're seeing so many things shifted away from our control and our financial benefit here in the U.S. So certainly we've taken a back seat to a lot of these other nations, and China seems to be central to a lot of the global planning in this world, if you want to use the word global to describe it all. Certainly they want this internationalism, and they want to set up this centralized system of control, and they want to steer away from the U.S. dollar. And certainly with nothing to back the U.S. dollar, and now the petrodollar pulled out from under us, well, it's devaluing the dollar, and we're seeing the results of that in the world today, especially here in the U.S. Inflation is through the roof. It's ridiculous. I have a hard time keeping food on my table here at the house. So it's crazy just how much the prices have gone up and the value of the dollar has gone down.
Without adequate shifts in salaries, I might add.
Well, the exact opposite. They're going for the basement now. But isn't it ironic that all of our life we've been told all this money and military buildup and the fake nuke scaring is all because of our enemies, Russia and China, and now they're together. Either one of them, we were told our whole lives, are big, bad, and a real threat. Well, now they're together.
Yeah, and they're in there with those other BRICS nations as well. You're talking India, and also Brazil is in on that too. So there's a South American component to this that most people don't discuss or tend to overlook. And we see all of the major changes that have happened in portions of South America over the course of the past couple of years. I'm thinking primarily of places like Venezuela and places like that, where we see these different regimes setting up shop. And certainly, it's shifting away the focus from the U.S. dollar, and the devaluation of the U.S. dollar is a real thing, and we're seeing the effects of that now. Real wages have gone down. So even though we've seen for years now people crying for like a $15 an hour minimum wage and stuff like that, well, now a lot of jobs are offering more than that and can't seem to keep people vested in the job or interested enough in the job to stay put. So turnover rates in employment circles are very high, although they'll claim that we have very, very low unemployment. But certainly when you have people working two and three jobs just to make ends meet, well, that artificially inflates the jobs numbers, doesn't it? And we see that going on across the board for a lot of middle-class Americans right now. They're having a very hard time, and people have had about enough of this financial pinch, but it's only going to get worse before it gets better. Let's put it that way.
Well, America is a real thorn in the side of those who want to take over the world because it's big. They have a right to bear arms, and people that are my age still remember ideas of freedom. And it appears at this point that instead of directly doing something to try to end all those problems at once, they're simply going to devolve this place until we destroy ourselves.
That's why we see the deviancy that's been injected into our culture for the last 20 plus years. It's gotten to the point of absolute ridiculousness just how much they're trying to drag down and destroy what America used to be.
Certainly. And I think it's a generational plan. It's not intended for our generation. It's the following generations that are going to be the ones that suffer the most from this, because they won't know a world where things have been any different. They don't remember a time like we do when things were much better financially for people, and things were much better in a lot of different ways here before the slow creep of globalism into the modern way of living that we have now, this interconnectedness all the time. And that's part of it too, because that's a major portion of the control system they want to put in place.
It's going to be a real shift in reality when my generation, or maybe people just slightly younger than me, are gone, and the generations that are here never knew the time before. It's gotten so bad, and people are aware of the gender game that's been played. But if you go look at what the young folks are tweeting and TikToking about, and yes, I know those are the improper terms, it's gotten to the point where dating is even a problem because of the animosity between men and women. It's crazy how well the social engineering has worked. And with people losing their houses, not being able to make enough money to eat, at some point, there's going to come a breaking point. And typically what happens in those situations, kind of like what we saw in France, they ran out of food. All the people without food went to go destroy every palace and every upper crust person they could get their hands on. So it was ripped apart from within. And I wonder, is that the real plan for America?
The divide and conquer tactics are in full-blown effect today. They've gotten things to the point that they've got numerous hot button issues that have massive divides. It gets attributed to the political spectrum, but it really it's the same game they've always played. Split things down the middle. And we saw that all the way back in the 1960s when they were dividing the families. And nowadays, with a lot of these deviant type issues, just like Hitler had his brown shirts to support and push his cause, we have a very large amount of people who have no problem pushing these deviancy causes.
Yeah, the social engineering works. There's no doubt about it. I want to mention a thing that I saw. When things are really going south, I usually scan the TV listings because I want to see what kind of programming they're pushing out. And I really couldn't believe it. About 4 or 5 days ago, they ran a program on the politics of America that told the truth. They told you that most Americans are unaware that they don't vote. The Electoral College seats presidents. They went through the whole thing and honestly told you that not only do you not live in a democracy, calling it a republic is a stretch, and it's a million miles from anything you thought based on what you were told in school. And then they closed the last half of the program the way they always do, telling you how important it is for you to vote after they just got done telling you that you're not actually voting. And when things like this start to come to the surface, it's pretty clear that the system they have been protecting for so long is about to come apart at the seams.
Despite these shifts, the dollar's role as the world's primary reserve currency remains largely unchallenged. The latest data from the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, shows that while the dollar's share of global reserves has declined slightly, no other currency has emerged as a significant rival. Most oil transactions, especially those involving Saudi Arabia, continue to be conducted in dollars, reflecting the deep economic and military ties between the United States and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, old habits die hard, and it takes a while to change the systems that have dollar signs in front of everything. I mean, we know it's coming, don't we, Wayne?
Well, we certainly do. But like you said, old habits die hard. And that's the whole thing. It's hard to get people to change the way they've been doing things. People are creatures of habit. And the same could be said for those people that are actually trading in these commodities like this. So they're going to use the dollar for as long as they can before they realize, you know what, this is almost worthless at this point. So we need to go and use some other means of exchange to do these commodities the right way. So until such a time, they will continue to use the dollar. And it seems to be the implication that's been applied for the past 50 years from the Saudis and from the U.S. to leverage people into using the dollar. And they're comfortable doing it. And that's the whole thing. It's their comfortable habit that they've fallen into. So it's going to take some time to shift away from that. But we are seeing the slow creep towards that right now.
Well, there's another side of this we haven't even touched. Oil is going away. So could it be that the demolition we're witnessing is because it's absolutely on the table for oil to go away as the thing that drives the majority of our vehicles? How soon that happens? They always say, oh, it'll be by 2030. They make all these claims, but we know that the global warming agenda is key to their takeover and key to removing the rights of everybody. And within that, oil is always pointed at as the big villain. So we know eventually oil's going away. And what else do we know? We know that these electric vehicles fit perfectly within the police state requirements. They can be shut down. They can be limited on how far they go. They could literally put up a border that a car can't cross. They could literally tell you your car can go 2 miles today. They can literally tell you anything they want, because the electricity applied to the technology is the policing of the police state that they're so dead set on acquiring. So I just put it out there that oil is probably going away before too long.
Yeah, but see, even that notion of oil going away is disingenuous in a way, because we use it for other things other than just fuel. It's used in plastics. It's used in pharmaceuticals. So the world controllers aren't going to want to give up those types of products that they have a major sway in society with. They're major money makers for them. So they're not going to let that go away. because a lot of what this is about is not truly about getting people away from the use of what they term fossil fuels because of their environmental effects. It's really about control, and it's really about these people staying in the positions of power and having control in this world, more so than it is about the good of humanity or the good of the earth or any such thing that they try to frame it as. So this whole green movement in and of itself is disingenuous to begin with. So that being the case, they're going to still be producing oil for various reasons. They're going to be using petroleum still for plastics, although they will try to switch away from that. And they do want the electric grid as a major controlling influence here. That's why they want to have us have electric cars and everything else. They want to put kill switches in it so they could control everything you do. But the problem is, a lot of people are beginning to see the writing on the wall with that, and they're not comfortable with that, especially in the events of a natural disaster like what has just occurred here in the U.S. and some of the southern states, in the Carolinas and Florida and Georgia and places like that, Tennessee even, with this major storm that went through. People need to be able to function outside of the auspices of the use of electricity, and things can't go on in a control system like they have in mind with the electricity goes off. So they have some faults in their way of thinking. And this is where I find a huge amount of hope in stabbing off some of this, because people are realizing that this is a bad idea to switch to a completely electrical system.
It's a terrible idea. And if you know the occult reasons to evaluate magnetism and electricity, you'll see that, as is always true, they backed the wrong horse, the dark horse. And when I said oil goes away, I should have stated clearly as it relates to vehicles. In other words, oils to the gas pumps, because you're right. Clearly, oil makes almost every medicine that's in a pharmacy, so many other things. But I'm talking about burning it in an engine.
Well, we're at the top of the hour here, but I don't know what these idiot activist groups think they're going to accomplish. Petroleum is literally used in every aspect of modern society now. It's not just to put gas in your car. That phone that you're using that's in your pocket, the clothes that you're wearing. I mean, you can just go on and on and on. Petroleum is absolutely a major and probably the major staple in modern society. Now, if you want to go live in the woods and wear bear skins, well, that's your lookout, but that's not most people.
Well, there's another problem with their big claim. I saw someone do a brilliant breakdown on the machinery required to mine what they need to make batteries. And the machines, these huge machines, they only come burning oil. That's the only way they exist, because they have to have the power and the torque and all the things they need. Those are oil burning vehicles, and they can't be replaced with an electric one. But what's more is they did the math on how much pollution it takes to create the electric thing we want to substitute it with. And it's just absurd. It is literally absurd. And so we know that it's a prop up. We know all these things, but nonetheless, change is at our doorstep. And for my part, I don't know what you guys think. I've had people telling me for over a year that they want people who are in positions to know things, that they want to kick off World War III in the Middle East. And when we think back on what we know Albert Pike wrote in the 1800s, he wrote about World War I, he wrote about World War II, and he was right on almost every point, not only that they would happen, but the outcomes. But few people realize he wrote about World War III. If these things come to pass, at what point will the population of this world wake up enough to recognize that this is all agenda and all stagecraft and fear pushing us towards that dreadful gate? Wayne, do you want to add anything before I wrap up hour one?
I would just like to add that that's actually a brilliant point you just made. I mean, Albert Pike did outline this whole notion of World War III, talking about how they would unleash the nihilists and everything else on society after such a time to bring about this doctrine of Lucifer into the mainstream finally at last. And those are his words. This was his letter written to Mazzini back in the 1880s, if memory serves me correctly. So certainly he's made some of these predictions that have come true. And we have these predictions of more things to come. And certainly we're seeing the chess pieces fall into place for some conflict in the Middle East right now, if we've been paying attention. This has been rolling towards this. And we're sitting in a very important window of time right now, because I don't know if most people realize this. This election cycle that is upcoming here and all these events that are happening now sits in a window of opportunity between two Friday the 13th, Of course, Friday, September 13th has passed, but there's another Friday the 13th this December coming. And these events are sitting central in those windows. So you could make of that what you will, but certainly there's an occult aspect to this as well.
All right, guys, I'm going to wrap up hour one so we can take a short break and come back. Wayne, do you want to mention where people can find your books?
Yeah, man. Everything that I have available is at my website now. That's www.alchemicaltechrevolution.com. And you can find links to all of my work there. Thank you again for having me on. It's always a pleasure, gentlemen.
All right. That's been hour one of episode 598, talking about the petrodollar, which is coming to its last days at a gas station near you. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. Members get access to all the forums, comments, threads. They can create all those things, and they can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, covering all my past telescope work to include lunar waves and my discovery of the sun we don't see, or the second sun. Lastly, I'm going to be making prints probably of my solar work. I have a platform on X, used to be Twitter. You can see some examples of that if you want. Anyhow, we're going to prep up for hour two, and I hope to see everybody out there logged in as a member for hour two. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.